Today, in part three of Barbara Newman's investigation into the plutonium industry, she reports on how plutonium worker Karen Silkwood was contaminated by the toxic material just 8 days before she died. Silkwood was killed last fall in a mysterious car accident as she was about to present data on falsification of quality control records at the Kerr-McGee plutonium plant to a newspaper reporter. These documents have never been recovered, which fuels the belief that her car crash was not an accident after all. Barbara continues.
Another mystery about the Karen Silkwood story is how she came to be contaminated by plutonium on three successive days, November 5th, 6th, and 7th. Portions of her skin were found to have plutonium contamination. This was especially confusing, as she apparently left the plant uncontaminated, yet returned the following days contaminated. In addition, an analysis of her fecal matter revealed that she had somehow ingested plutonium. The Atomic Energy Commission never established if plutonium was eaten intentionally by Silkwood or if she had been poisoned, as speculated by her union. The poisoning hypothesis grew from the finding of food in her refrigerator, which was heavily contaminated with plutonium. James Kepler, head of Region 3 of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which directed the investigation of the Silkwood contamination.
The most significant point or fact that we've established was that the contamination of Karen Silkwood did not result from an incident at the plant. We were able to confirm this through interviews with people and reviews of available records and radiation monitoring equipment. The second key point to this is that there was evidence to show that her bioassay samples were doctored. At least the urine samples, at least two urine samples were doctored. Reasons for this we don't have.
The final Atomic Energy Commission report on the contamination of Karen Silkwood found that not two, but four of her urine samples were found to be doctored. This means that plutonium was added to them after excretion by Silkwood. No answers as to who, when, how, where, or even why plutonium was added to these samples. But there are theories. First is that Silkwood doctored her own samples in order to discredit Kerr-McGee by showing that work conditions were unsafe and could lead to worker contamination. Those who follow this theory hold that Silkwood's contamination could have resulted inadvertently from an accident when she doctored her own samples. The second theory is that Kerr-McGee doctored her samples in order to discredit her. She was, after all, an agitating union member. The third theory is that somebody involved in quality control falsification doctored Silkwood samples in order to discredit her or to have her moved out of the quality control laboratory. The samples were, after all, seemingly accessible on a shelf at the Kerr-McGee plant. While the Atomic Energy Commission found that Karen Silkwood's apartment was contaminated, it never did ascertain how or by whom. Now, for the first time, the investigator for the Atomic Energy Commission, Jerry Philip, now of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, pinpoints the time period in which the apartment was contaminated.
I think that the information in the report indicates that the contamination had to occur sometime between approximately 11:30 p.m. on the 6th and before the people came to check the apartment the following day. I think we can pin that apartment contamination down that closely.
The time the apartment was checked by Kerr-McGee was at about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon of the 7th. Mm-hmm. Now, the roommate of Karen Silkwood, Sherry Ellis, reported for work at about 11:30 p.m. She worked on the midnight shift.
Right.
Who was at the apartment from 11:30 at night to the following day, to your knowledge?
To my knowledge, only Karen Silkwood and Drew Stevens.
So then what you think is that one of them contaminated the apartment?
To my knowledge, there were only three people who had access to the apartment during the time that it could have been contaminated. Sherry Ellis, Drew Stevens, and Karen Silkwood. It was indicated at one point along the way that sometimes the apartment was left unlocked. and therefore someone could have entered during the absence of those people. And we can't rule out that possibility.
What you're saying is that at the time that Karen Silkwood left in the morning with Drew Stevens, someone could have come in that morning period before it was checked? Is that what you're saying, between 8 a.m. and...
No, that's not a practical approach, because then how do you explain Karen Silkwood being contaminated?
Well, then what are we getting at?
All he is saying is that the evidence that we have been able to put together based on interviews with people, review of records, indicates that prior to 11:30, the night of the 6th, the apartment was not contaminated. That the contamination appeared to occur after that time. And that's really all we've been able to pinpoint.
This theory of when the Silkwood apartment became contaminated did not appear in the Atomic Energy Commission's report on the Silkwood contamination. Actually, Karen Silkwood did not leave the apartment with her boyfriend, Drew Stevens, on the morning of November the 7th. He left alone at 6 in the morning. She left about an hour and a half later. What Nuclear Regulatory Commission investigator Philip and regional director Kepler say here is the closest that agency officials have come to suggesting that Silkwood herself contaminated her apartment. One who accepts this theory is left with this unresolved question. If the Atomic Energy Commission is correct that Silkwood's contamination did not result from any incident at the Kerr-McGee plant, but that she was contaminated at her apartment, how then was she contaminated on the mornings of November 5th and 6th if the apartment was not contaminated until the evening of the 6th? In fact, after Karen Silkwood registered contamination on plant monitoring equipment on these days, she was decontaminated before leaving the plant, only to return the following mornings once again contaminated. Investigator Jerry Phillip of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
We didn't resolve that question during the investigation. We asked Karen those questions, and we intended to explore that further with her, but it was her contention that she was not successfully decontaminated at the times that she did leave the plant. The records and the statements and interviews of the health physics people who were involved in her decontamination was to the effect that they monitored her after their decontamination efforts, and that she was clean, she was decontaminated.
So the question persists. If the Nuclear Regulatory Commission thinks that Silkwood was contaminated in her apartment and not at work, and that the apartment was not contaminated until sometime between 11:30 at night on November the 6th and the morning of November the 7th, how did Karen Silkwood get contaminated on the 5th and 6th of November? No answers.
Barbara, I have a few questions on the basis of that report that we just heard. How do you think she got contaminated? Your own opinion on it. Who do you think did it?
You're putting me on the spot.
Yes.
Well, the evidence seems to point to the fact that she contaminated herself when she salted her samples. That's what the Atomic Energy Commission strongly suggests and would have us believe. But from researching the story for 3 months, I feel that Kerr-McGee had every incentive in the world to discredit her and salt her samples after they were excreted. They had access to them. They did the first tests on them. And really, I'm as perplexed as you are. I really don't know.
You think the evidence looks good on either side? She could have done it herself, or the company could have done it?
Either one of them had the motives. She had the motive to make the company look bad and the fact that workers were contaminated because of health and safety violations. The company, on the other hand, had the incentive to make her look bad.
Because she was a troublemaker.
That's right.
Why is it that we're not hearing from anybody from Kerr-McGee so far in this series?
Kerr-McGee categorically refused to talk to any reporters. We contacted them, I would say, between 10 and 15 times. I even called Mr. McGee, the chairman of Kerr-McGee, at home when I was in Oklahoma. And he just wouldn't talk to me. They won't talk to the press on this.
Barbara Newman, thank you.
Tomorrow, Barbara looks at the implications of the fact that plutonium, which contaminated Karen Silkwood's apartment, was smuggled from the Kerr-McGee facility unnoticed.